The Agada about David and the Gevonim is a really unbelievable Agada. There is so much here. There is so much Musar here, as I've suggested. And I wanted to just focus on a couple of points. The story, firstly, for those of you who didn't read the Gemara, there was a famine for 3 years. There was no rain, really. And David wanted to know why. He sought God's counsel. At first, David, before seeking God's counsel, thought maybe it was Ovdei Avodah Zarah. No, they weren't worshiping Avodah Zarah. Then he thought maybe they were Megala Arayos. They weren't being Megala Arayos. Then he thought perhaps maybe it was because of people who promised, who pledged to give tzedakah, and then never delivered. And they quote the pasuk from Mishlei. I love this. It's like the clouds that come, and then no rain actually comes. It's God's response. Now, the poskei tzedakah and enosnim cause a lack of rain. God sends the clouds, but just to tease us, the same way that people get up and make pledges and promise to support the aniyim, do so, the same way they are punished. That in itself is a very important mussar. With the Yom HaRayim coming, I'm not a big fan of appeals, but if you take a pledge, you need to fulfill it. And especially if you take a pledge in public. You would think, I always thought, naively, people who pledge in public, of course, give the money. But unfortunately, shuls and institutions have to chase people down for that. As a general rule, you shouldn't pledge. Better to just give. Anyway, David is then finally seeks God's counsel, and he is told that it's the El Sha'ol Ve'el Beis HaDamim Al Asharim Isis HaGivonim. It was because of what happened with Pshuto Shemikra, because Sha'ol killed Givonim. The Gemara says, A, they weren't Masbid Sha'ol Kahalacha, and B, because Sha'ol had killed the Givonim. So David basically decided it was too late to do the Hesped. More than 12 months had passed, far more than 12, 30 years had passed, as one of the Rishonim points out. But he was going to appease the Givonim so they should forgive what happened to them, and then the rain would come. So David called the Givonim and says, What can I do that you will accept? You will be meratzeh nachalas Hashem. You will forgive and so on. And the Givonim respond by saying, "We're not interested in money," which obviously was implied. We'll pay you. We'll provide economic restitution, reparations. All we want is 7 members of the house of Shaul to kill in lieu of the 7 members of our house that he killed. And David basically had felt he had no choice but to grant that request. But because they refused to be appeased, David was gozer aleihem something. We spent a few days talking about that. And why was that? Because David said that this ummah has 3 characteristics. What it means to be a Jew is to be baishanim, rachmanim, and gomlei chasadim. Is to be have a sense of shame, to have a sense of rachmanis, and to have a sense of being even though it's a mistranslation, I'll use the word charitable, to be gomlei chasadim. And therefore, David had to grant the request, and he did, even though it was in violation of 2 Torah laws. Nonetheless, he granted the request, but at the same time, he basically separated them from the kahal. Ha'givonim lo mimnei Yisrael hema. The major theme of this Agada, I believe, is actually about misplaced mercy. It's about misplaced mercy. The characteristics of the Givonim is they weren't Rachmanim. But just as bad as being a Rachman is having misplaced Rachmanis. The Givonim themselves had misplaced Rachmanis. They didn't want to impose anything upon the Jewish people. We don't have any qualms with anybody else. David was ready to pay a king's ransom to them. They weren't interested. They just wanted 7 members of the house of Shaul because they didn't want to impose upon the Tzibur because they were so kindly disposed to the rest of Klal Yisrael. That is misplaced Rachmanis. Shaul's killing Novi Ragohanim was the result of misplaced Rachmanis as well. The Gemara, at the end of Yoma, points out that when Shaul first approached Amalek, it says, Vayara Banachal. When he was given the command, he fought in the Nachal. Chazal say that Shaul, the night before going to fight Amalek, was being done over the morality of Torah, and he said, even if the men sinned, how did the women and the children sin? And Abaskal came out and said, Al Tehi Tzadik Harbei. And then, but Shaul had Rachmanis in violation of God's command in a situation where Rachmanis wasn't warranted. And then, what ultimately happened with Shaul, when Rachmanis was needed, when he should have been shown mercy, when Novi are Kohanim, he murdered them in cold blood. And Abaskal came out, the Gemara says, and said, Al Tusha Harbei. People who have misplaced Rachmanis in situations where it's not warranted, to people for whom it's not deserved, are not true Rachmanim. And when it comes to the situations where they need to show Rachmanis, it's often lacking. Even when you get to the end of the sugya, Chazal make this point as well. David spared the children of Yonasan. He wanted them spared. And the Gemara asks, "V'chimas ufanim yesh b'davar?" Justice was called for here. If they were going to be picked somehow, it had to be a fair system. Having mercy upon Yonasan's descendants at the expense of other members of Shaul's family, that's also misplaced mercy, until the Gemara finally says that he passed them in front of the Aron and God chose. David prayed on their behalf. You want to pray on someone's behalf, you're certainly entitled to do so. But the idea that you're going to vayachmol David al mefiboshes ben Yonasan, that's not okay. Misplaced mercy is unacceptable. And it can't be at the expense of justice. Very often, showing sympathy or kindness to one individual often comes at the expense of another individual. That's not kindness, that's not mercy, that's a distortion of justice. But there's another piece to this, agada, unrelated to the issue, perhaps, of Rachmanis, unless you consider the term compassionate capitalism, which doesn't have to be a steer mine obey, but currently I believe is. There's another part of the Gemara which is astounding in terms of its statement of Jewish values that runs completely contrary to contemporary American values. And I think it's a very important issue, because I hear this is an issue which is probably spoken about in a lot of churches. It's spoken about in a lot of synagogues and temples, but it's not an issue that I've ever heard spoken about in a shul. And I think that it's very, very unfortunate and very deeply disturbing. The Gemara states that Shaul never killed anyone. Where did we find that Shaul killed anyone? So what does the Gemara say? Because Shaul destroyed Irnav HaKohanim, who provided Parnasa for the Givonim. Therefore, it was as if he had killed them, because he destroyed their source of Parnasa. Many years ago, in the late 90s, I don't think any of you, some of you may know the story, but you're pretty much all too young to remember the story, but I remember. There was a huge, huge Kiddush Hashem made by Aaron Feuerstein, who was a member of a prominent Bostonian family. He was the owner of Malden Mills. It was a private company, and there was a fire that burned the thing down. And basically what he did was, for 2 months, he put his workers on payroll even though they weren't working, you know, and it cost the company a fortune of money. For a while they had to go into bankruptcy, but the last time I checked, they did actually come out of bankruptcy. But he could have taken a $300 million insurance payment, let the company fold and walk away. But instead, not only did he keep the company opening, but he also paid his workers for 60 days when there was absolutely nothing going on. Al Pidin, he certainly wasn't Mechuyev. And the true capitalists just scratched their heads at how a person could do this. This was such an enormous, enormous Kiddush Hashem. But it is so contrary to the ethos that exists, if you want to call it Wall Street, and an American big business today. It is so contrary to the ethos. You're too young to remember, but I remember, and it was a little bit even before my time, as in my emerging into adulthood, every time you would hear about companies laying off thousands of workers, and Wall Street would cheer. You knew that when they announced 40,000 or how many layoffs in Kodak, and you know, and that even though the area of Rochester was going to go completely downhill, Wall Street cheered all over the place. That's what it's all about. You can have cost efficiencies and make more money, except for this little part that's often forgotten, the human dimension of how many people lose their jobs. Now, I know that a company that can't make it and can't have a functioning business model, they have no choice but to lay off workers, because at the end, if you don't fix your company, you're going to lay off everybody. That is true. However, when the issue is of making a lot of money or making an obscene lot of money, so the Torah has something to say about this issue. That when you to fire workers is not something, to cost people their parnasa is not a davar katan. It's not a small thing. In the case of Shaul and Novir Kohanim, it was considered as if he had killed them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu withheld rain from Klal Yisrael for 3 years. Why? Because he laid off 7 workers of the Givonim. It's an astounding statement of what Torah morality is. An astounding statement. And it's completely different to anything that you would hear today. Again, I know that sometimes companies have absolutely no choice. There's no question about that. The Torah is not communist. That isn't the issue. But the way it's presented, the way you read the newspapers, and the human loss and suffering that's entailed is absolutely staggering and astounding. And you hear almost nothing about it. I have never, ever in my time, I've been davening in Orthodox shuls and hearing drushas and in communities hearing discussions around tables in 30 plus years of adulthood, since my bar mitzvah at least, I have never heard this as a discussion, as an issue, as a value. You know, when you live economically in another society, so choshen mishpat doesn't apply in all respects. Many of the umdanas, many of the kinyonim that exist in general society are binding. They are assumed when we engage in behavior. It's called situmta. If a handshake in a certain culture is a kinyon, even though the Torah doesn't recognize handshake as a kinyon, so then it's binding as a kinyon, you can't back out. It's like at kesef, shtar, and chazaka. Situmta works for kinyonim and assumptions in terms of what is the din. In terms of what is the din. But situmta does not work on moral values. It doesn't matter what the moral values are in any particular culture of society. There are things that the Torah has to say that are eternal, and they apply everywhere forever. Everywhere and forever. And if the Gemara states that from the fact that the Anshe Nov, the Kohanim, will must speak in Mayim and Muslim to the Givonim, and because they cost them their Parnassah, it was Ki'ilu Haragan, that value has to echo everywhere where Jews live, where from Jews live, and eternally. That has to be something that when we talk about a Torah value society, which we believe ritual law is for us, but the values that we believe in, the ethical values, apply to all, every society, to every human being. And there are certain values, that can easily get assimilated and lost because it becomes so normal, because you open up the newspaper and this business bought out that business in a leveraged buyout, and boom, there went 50,000 jobs. 50,000 people, according to Chazal, were just killed. The price had better be worth it. So when we talk about these kinds of things, we need to think about what Chazal had to say about what the Torah is teaching us. That people's parnasa, even though the owner of a business is the owner of the business, al pi choshen mishpat, he has the right to lay off workers. A schir yom, after the day is gone, you don't have to hire him. You don't have to rehire him. Absolutely, that is the case. Al pi din, that's 100% correct. It's not gezel. But it's not the way Bnei Yisrael behave. Bnei Yisrael are Baishanim, Rachmanim, and Gomle Chasadim. And those are values that have to resonate and echo and govern our lives in every place and every time. Shabbos.